You want kicking things out of orbit?
Oh my gosh!
I'm gonna just knock it over.
One of the greatest fighters.
John Jones beat every champion. Pretty much
that. Khabib gets his hands on McGregor some of that night.
Let's get into it.
And welcome to the Fight Night Picks 2020 Year End Award Show. As always, one half of the pickers, but not one half of the network, at Craig Allen FMP. You can find me there every single week, and we're really getting forward to a great year ahead. And a lot of people know us for our fight predictions, but as you will see in the introductions, we are more than just the Fight Night Picks predictions. So let's bring in the rest of the team. And listen, he is my brother. He is also one third of the bow tie wearing gang. Matt Allen. Matt, how are you? For you overall, I mean, 2020 was a weird year, but for you and for MMA in general, what were some of your major takeaways from this year?
That Dana White can secure an island on a moment's notice. I think that's the most important. No, it was a weird year for sports, really, in general, being that NBA, MLB, whatever you really follow. And for the UFC to be one of the few sports that pushed through, maybe even though they possibly shouldn't have at some points. I don't want to be put in some long promo from Dana White, but I think it was a really exciting year for UFC all in all. I think they still put on really good events. They put on a lot of great fights, and we've got a lot of really competitive awards on this show that they're really hard to come up with. So really good year for MMA, I'd say, as a whole, even though it was a bad year for everything else, it seems.
And I mean, we were definitely really fortunate having the Bellators, the KSW, some of the other organizations pulling their weight, especially later on in the year. Now, the other member of the channel, not blood related, but a lot of people consider him a father figure to Fight Night Picks, one half of Early Stoppage, the recap show, and many other programs to come with Fight Night Picks, the main man out of Arizona himself, John Franklin. John, I love what you're wearing. I love the action figure, not doll, that you have behind you. For 2020, for MMA, what are some of your major takeaways from this year?
You know, I got to echo what Matt said. My big takeaway is, listen, I'm going to go ahead and give Dana the hug, the thank you that he so desperately needs so he cannot take to Twitter and release these videos that are blasting the people that didn't support him. Listen, he did what he said he was going to do. He brought us the fights. He did it in a healthy fashion. The good news, I think, moving forward from 2020 is that in lieu of having all of our bigger name fighters and champions fighting, because of a lack of a live gate, we got to see a lot of fighters sort of on the, 5 to 15, 5 to 20 range. Our rookie of the year is stacked. Our fighter of the year has some people that you might not expect. So I think the UFC, I think MMA is very healthy. And I think that UFC, the 2020 actually helped that.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird year for sure. And a lot of prospects and a lot of fighters getting their due. And like you said, kind of tipping our hand. Rookie of the Year, one of those categories that we will be talking about. Haven't really seen that with a lot of the other shows. So some fighters getting their proper rookie cards this year. And like I said from the start, make sure you check out the rest of the properties with Fight Night Picks, Early Stoppage, the recap show, This Week in MMA. We have all sorts of crazy things happening with Fight Night Picks outside of just the picks. And guys, without further ado, let's get into this award show and talk about our first award to give away. We're talking about the Male Fighter of the Year.
Male Fighter of the Year.
Our first award of the night. And listen, this is the Fight Night Picks Prediction Trophy. It's got the Canadian flag all over it. But a lot of these fighters, actually all of these fighters, are not Canadian. You saw the nominees in front of you. But if we can go back through them one more time, we got Kevin Holland, Khamzat Chimaev. We get Gilbert Burns, a guy who's totally redesigned his life at 170 pounds. Brandon Moreno, the assassin baby, and Glover Teixeira. Guys, five deserving fighters. We have an honorable mention. Bellator's Jason Jackson. Look at the year that guy had. Capped it off with a great performance over the former UFC lightweight champ, Benson Henderson. It's going to be a recurring theme throughout this awards ceremony. A lot more fights in the UFC than a lot of the other promotions. And of course, all of this hinges on Rising 26 coming up at year's end, December 31st. John Franklin, we have this list of five. What really sticks out to you out of these five deserving candidates here?
You know, I think it's what I kind of touched on earlier. It's guys that you wouldn't have expected to see. You expect to see, you know, Israel Adesanya. You expect to see Kamaru Usman, Conor McGregor, Miocic, and the way the pandemic affected the year, those guys weren't as active. So, we decided who we were going to nominate. Doesn't feel right nominating guys that fought maybe once or even twice in the year. So it just shows you, again, the health of the UFC, the health of MMA, these are the guys who are most active and most productive in 2020.
Now, Matt, I know there's a couple of guys on this list that definitely pull at your heartstrings. And with full disclosure, Fight Night Picks, a very pro Brandon Moreno show. I mean, for the last couple of years, we've been saying the past baby champ 2020. Now, full disclosure, we picked against him in his last two fights, but that's just water under the bridge, capping off having a conversation with the man himself. You're also a big Gilbert Burns guy, Matt. Out of all of these fighters that we do have, again, what are some of the sticking points for you?
So it is kind of weird this year because you have fighters who are at different stages of their careers. A lot of the time for Fighter of the Year, you have these young up-and-coming prospects. But like Glover Teixeira is on this list and he's pushing 40 years old. Like you have kind of the resurgence of some careers when you are talking about Glover. And even Gilbert Burns, like before he moved up to 170, I don't think anyone really thought he was ever a title contender or really a threat to become a champion. But now it seems like he's one fight away and he has a really good chance against Usman. And then of course you have the Kevin Hollins and Khamzat Chimaev who are more of that on the up and up sort of breed. So a lot of different people you can pick from, a lot of people who could be champ next year too, which is a great sign. Cause you have guys like Brandon Moreno, who he's basically promised a title shot at the beginning of next year. Gilbert Burns, the same thing. Chimaev feels like he's always one win away. And Kevin Holland, again, Kevin Holland has put on a show this whole year. So a lot of really good choices to pick from. And it is neat though, how we are seeing people at different stages of their careers still being nominated for this award.
So guys, with that, we will really narrow it down here. I mean, Glover Teixeira really capped off a great year with a wonderful finish over Thiago Santos, the comeback. Brandon Moreno, obviously the draw in his title fight against Deiveson Figueiredo. You look at Gilbert Burns and the performance that he put on against Tyron Woodley. You look at Khamzat Chimaev, comes in, three performance bonuses, three big finishes. But we have to tip our caps and give away the Fight Night Picks Male Fighter of the Year Award to Kevin Holland, and I'm sure that's to no surprise to anybody. I mean, the performances that this guy put on, now maybe the level of competition wasn't quite there, but John Franklin, I just want to throw it to you before we move on. He capped it with such a statement win in his last fight over Jacare Souza. What do you see in store for Kevin Holland moving forward?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, we talked about when he, Matt and I, about when you beat someone like Jacare, do you get the bump because of Jacare's name, or do you keep your level because of where Jacare's at? I think that he's building a nice little career for himself. That is Kevin Holland. I think that he's going to have big things in 2021. I think that he sort of gets close. He probably cracks the top five. I do not see a title shot for him in 2021 just because of how thick that division is. The only way I could see it is if Adesanya wins the belt and he's gone for good. But other than that, I don't think, you know, and Adesanya's got a lot of things to do. But, yeah, it was a great year for Kevin Holland. And, listen, one more thing. This guy won about as many ways as you can win him. He had KOs. He had subs. He had three performance bonuses. That really is what we voted pushed me over the top, was just the variety in ways that he had such an interesting year.
And, I mean, really, his win over Sideshow Bob, hopefully wherever Charlie Ontiveros is tonight, he's sleeping easy. That was such a tough fight. All right, let's move on to our next category on the evening.
Female Fighter of the Year.
All right, we're talking Female Fighter of the Year, and there's so many different deserving candidates. Honorable mention goes to Bo Meng, huge first-round win in her one and only fight in 2020, and that's where it's kind of discounted or taking her out of the running. But our top five fighters here, Jessica Andrade, kind of an odd year, right? I mean, it didn't really work out for her at 115. She moves up to 125, and it's like a hot knife through butter. Jessica Andrade definitely deserving to be on this list. Lucky Lauren Murphy, you talk about a career resurgence, and I know there's a lot of different lists out there, and we're going to talk about a couple of different fighters. Lauren Murphy really kicked off this win streak in 2019. 2020, definitely her year. You look at Mackenzie Dern, you talk about somebody coming back and putting on very impressive performances. Mackenzie Dern's stock has gone through the roof in 2020. Carlos Sparza, former champ. We always talked about it, you know, Carlos Sparza adding a wrinkle here to her game, adding a wrinkle there to her game, really building herself back up. 2020, definitely a statement for her. And for Yan Xiaonan, holy smokes. I mean, wouldn't it be something if we had Zhang Weili taking on Yan Xiaonan in an all-China women's strawweight title fight? That would be absolutely amazing. Matt, I'm going to throw it over to you. Your bow tie's a little off-center. You're the Nod King of Fight Night Picks from the comments section. Matt, who really sticks out to you out of this list of five?
Okay, so it is kind of interesting, too, because like you had said, one of the people nominated in Jessica Andrade has a loss this year, but you kind of have to look at the loss itself. Did she just get beat by Rose Namajunas? No, that fight itself is nominated for Fight of the Year. You can't have a Fight of the Year without it being a competitive fight. So she's involved in one of the best fights of the year, and then she moves up in weight. And listen, Caitlin Chookagian, former title challenger, maybe not the best fighter to ever fight for a title, but to go out there and knock her out with a body shot in the first round to become the number one contender in your first fight in the division, extremely impressive. Lauren Murphy is a fighter who I have had a strange relationship with. I wasn't all that high on her at first coming off the Ultimate Fighter. It just seemed like she was always begging for something that she had yet to deserve. And then this year, I think you really have to look at what they do outside of the cage as well. And Lauren Murphy's a really good example of a fighter who they did the fight game the proper way for most of their career. They didn't talk a lot of crap. They didn't go out of their way to really disrespect their opponent. And then this year, it just seems like Lauren Murphy's had a massive chip on her shoulder. She's done just doing the UFC favors, and she's going out there putting on extremely impressive performances, calling her shots too afterwards. You really got to love that. And with Mackenzie Dern, the improvements that she's been able to show from fight to fight, because I know we've been pretty harsh on her and the prediction shows about how terrible her striking looks, pretty much fight in and fight out. But in her last fight against Souza, she looked phenomenal. Or Jandy Hoban, my bad. She looked phenomenal. And she was great on the ground, too. So a lot of really good picks this year. And Carla Esparza, last but not least, for her to go from being destroyed by Ioana Jędrzejczyk, kind of having that journeywoman-esque career, if you will, and then finally able to get a nice string of wins together, it's nice to see Carla Esparza get her name back in the top tier of the women's divisions.
John Franklin, your take on this list? I mean, again, there's a lot of honorable mentions that we could have out there. Bo Meng, definitely deserving of that. Ayaka Hamasaki, will she play into Female Fighter of the Year or our next category that will be coming up? Who knows with the Ryzen 26 event coming up. But John, I'll let you give this award away if you'd like to. There's one fighter that I think is definitely deserving of this award, and it might catch a lot of people by surprise.
I agree. I'm going to go ahead and give the award away. First, what more can be said than what Matt said about all these fighters? The Esparza thing especially for me stands out because, you know, when you have – I stumbled across an interview I did once with Michael Bisping, and we talked about when he got knocked out by Dan Anderson. And I'm like, that's the kind of thing that puts you away for good as a fighter. You just are never the same. Esparza had that same kind of thing with Ioana Jędrzejczyk. And then to come back, and you know, you want to think that maybe she rebuilt her career. The only problem with Carla Esparza, and why you probably don't give her the nod here, is just too many split decisions. You just fight right to the level of your competition, and then three people say, okay, maybe she won, maybe she didn't. So this year, for Fight Night Picks, 2020, we're going for Female Fighter of the Year. Lucky Lauren Murphy.
Lauren Murphy, congratulations. And I mean, really, what a year it was. If you have a look at her overall record, I mean, like I said, she had the win in 2019 against Mara Romero-Barella, no longer with the UFC. Kicking it off, getting a big win over Andrea Lee earlier on in the year back in February. Beats Roxanne Modafferi. Who beats Roxanne Modafferi these days? I mean, she's such an elite gatekeeper, if you will, in this flyweight division. And then you look at the win that she had over Lilia Shakarova. And Matt, I know you and I really pumped Lilia Shakarova's tires.
Don't drag me into this.
Really focused on her wrestling credentials. Nope. She had been a national champion wrestler. She'd been training with a lot of the top fighters around her region. And again, we talk about hot knife through butter. I mean, Lauren Murphy made it look absolutely easy. So again, the Female Fighter of the Year, lucky Lauren Murphy, congratulations. And fellas, let's move on to our next category, Male Champ of the Year.
Male Champ of the Year.
All right, for Male Champ of the Year, this is a really tricky one because, again, and it's a theme of the show, the UFC really dominated, but we do have one fighter in these categories, and it's pretty apparent, especially by the picture, because it was very tough to find one. Phil DeFreeze had himself a year. And if you can't tell the story of Phil DeFreeze without focusing on his UFC career. He battled mental demons. He had a hard time making it to the cage. He, of course, lost to Stipe Miocic. He went to Bellator. He had a fight with M1 Global, bounced around a little bit. This guy has absolutely found his footing with KSW. And you can look at his last fight at KSW 57 and go, well, he fought an old Michael Akita. Okay, so be it. But this guy continues to finish decent talent, continues to put on really good performances. He's been a great KSW heavyweight champ. I think he's deserving of being in this category for sure. But the other fighters, Stipe Miocic getting the win over Daniel Cormier. How could you not have him here? Huge trilogy fight. And maybe you didn't love the fight, but Miocic definitely deserving. We have Jan Blachowicz. And if you want to talk about, again, a late career resurgence, if you will, Jan Blachowicz at the start of his UFC career was a 500 fighter, if that. And he really struggled to get wins in high-pressure situations. His 2020 was absolutely amazing. The win over Beeston 25-8 was a huge one. The win over Dominic Reyes and just shooting his shots to the body, absolutely amazing. We have Deiveson Figueiredo. I mean, what can I say? The fights against Benavidez, missing weight or not, amazing. The fight against Alex Perez, the fight against Brandon Moreno, great stuff from our flyweight champ, Matt. Flyweights never die, as we always say. And Israel Adesanya. I mean, yes, you might have thought that the fight against Yoel Romero was a bit of a dud, but the fight against Paulo Costa was something that you pay for a masterclass on YouTube. John Franklin, we have a lot of different fighters out here. And again, maybe no Bellator prelim champs, but if you look at this list, what really stands out to you?
You know, the freeze thing is, you know, I mean, that's a conversation I'm not prepared to have ever. Jan Blachowicz is so a couple of guys, like we said here, they find themselves in a situation where a little bit's getting taken away from them just circumstantially, right? Adesanya, obviously the pandemic affected him because he's a huge draw. Blachowicz, he won a belt not from John Jones. It was vacated. Nothing to do with him. He still got the belt. Stipe Miocic, he's, you know, a first responder. So that affects how often he's going to fight. It always has. And so he had the one win. But the win was so huge and so legacy-forming that the question becomes, you get the nod. And then Figueiredo, you can't mention his name without mentioning he missed weight. Imagine if he hadn't missed weight. I mean, this guy in four fights basically cleaned out flyweight, which admittedly was not a deep division because, you know, it was on the chopping block last year or whatever. But, I mean, this guy's got Henry Cejudo thinking about maybe coming out of retirement because of what he's done. So, listen, this is a interesting category. It seems like I've kind of tipped my hand on the winner, but there's a lot of guys here who did some work, and they made the best of the opportunities they had.
And, I mean, Matt, your guy, Brandon Moreno, was just a sliver away from beating Deiveson Figueiredo. We'd have a whole different conversation on our hands here. Again, this is a pretty tricky one, and I would assume that across the board, a lot of different shows, a lot of different personalities are probably going to go with the same fighter. You can make a case for the other four that are on this list, and maybe Phil DeFries. I might be the only one that's including him on some of these lists. But Matt, if you're going to give away this award, who is our male champ of the year?
So I know how difficult it is to make sushi by hand, and anyone who has the patience to be able to not only do that, but also be a professional hairdresser and also own a water buffalo, plus win four basically title fights in 1 year, deserves to be your male champ of the year. That's Deiveson Figueiredo. Missing weight or not, the first fight against Joseph Benavidez was not competitive in the slightest. And how does he one-up that? He puts on one of the greatest title fight performances of all time in the rematch, just to really cement that he is the best 125er in the world. And then on short notice, he chokes out Alex Perez in the first round without any issue whatsoever. And to top that all off, he decides to go out and have a Fight of the Year nominee as his final fight to cap off his year. Deiveson Figueiredo definitely deserves to be male champ of the year. He had a phenomenal year, and I do think that he not only upped his profile as a fighter in the pound for pound rankings, Deiveson Figueiredo has a lot more eyes on him now than he did the start of the year, and I think that has a lot to do with sort of people getting to know him outside the cage, along with just how entertaining he is inside the cage.
All right, there you have it. Our male champ of the year, Mr. Deiveson Figueiredo out of Brazil. I mean, who could be more deserving than Figueiredo? You'd be hard-pressed to find a candidate, really. So let's transition over. And I mean, for Figueiredo, things could have been totally different if he didn't decide to kick poor Brandon Moreno in the nuts as hard as he could. That won't happen in our next category. Let's check out the female champ of the year.
Female champ of the year.
All right. Now, we had a really interesting conversation about the male champ of the year. When we look at female champ of the year, this is all dependent on the rising card that we have coming up November. And I keep saying November, but December 31st, New Year's Eve, Ryzen 26. Hamasaki, if she's able to get a win, definitely would slide into this conversation. Unfortunate, though, that we can't wait till 2021. So if we have a look at our candidates, Juliana Velasquez might be a little bit of a dark horse for this one. And the reason why I say that, the big win over Alimaleh McFarlane, a fighter that Bellator has pushed for the longest time, sneaky little wins against the Christina Williams and Bruna Ellen of the world, really got her into a great position. Huge win for Juliana Velasquez and for Brazil getting that belt around her waist closer to the end of the year. You also have Chris Cyborg, again, Bellator featherweight champ, absolutely beat Julia Budd pillar to post, looked amazing in that fight, submitted Arlene Blenko, beat her up on the feet. She looked amazing in both of those contests. We also had Zhang Wei Li. I mean, fight of the year against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. We'll get to that a little bit later. It's unfortunate, though, that for Zhang Wei Li and for Amanda Nunes, only one fight this year. Amanda Nunes getting the huge statement win over poor Felicia Spencer. Again, a Canadian kudos has to go to Felicia Spencer for withstanding that fight. And then last but not least, Valentina Shevchenko. I mean, the two title defenses this year, and I know that she lost a round against Jennifer Maia, but you're going to lose rounds when you're at the top fighting that top level competition. And I know a lot of people counted Jennifer Maia out. They count every fighter that takes on Valentina Shevchenko out. She was more than a 1,400 favorite in her first fight. In her second fight, she was more than an 1,800 favorite. That stuff's unheard of in MMA, and she continues to win. Matt, I'm going to throw it over to you again. Tilted bow tie. This is a really difficult one to try and pick just due to the circumstances. Because again, Nunes fought once. Zhang Wei Li fought once. Velasquez had the one title fight. It's a very difficult one here.
Oh, I think we can all agree. This is really a two horse race between Cyborg and Valentina because they were the two more active champs. And you do have to consider the level of dominance that they were able to achieve as well. Because it's not like Valentina just beat her opponents. And yes, the Maia fight might have been a little underwhelming for some, but she beat the brakes off her for 23 minutes of that fight. And then don't even get me started on the Caitlin Chookagian fight. That fight wasn't even competitive from the beginning. So when you look at what Valentina was able to accomplish, I do think she kind of distinguishes herself outside of most of the other champs in the UFC. And with Chris Cyborg, like you had said, the fact that she went over and not only beat Julia Budd, and Julia Budd was someone who, outside the UFC, we thought she might be one of the few who, if she was matched up with some top-tier UFC talent, she'd be able to get some wins over them. And for Chris Cyborg to not really even have a competitive fight with her, just march her down for four rounds and then knock her out, it was super impressive. The Blenko fight, listen, she was going to win that fight no matter what. Like, there was no way Arlene Blenko was going to be able to beat Chris Cyborg, but still the level of dominance that she was able to show in that fight, it was never even competitive. So I really do think it comes down to either Valentina or Chris Cyborg.
And I'm definitely in agreement with you there. So John Franklin being somewhat of a tiebreaker, possibly, who are you going with for this award?
Well, I agree with everything Matt said, but I mean, listen, if we're splitting hairs, let's split hairs, right? Valentina was a bigger favorite in her fights and didn't perform as well as Cyborg did. So now you could play the UFC Bellator game if you'd like. I'm happy to play that game anytime anyone else is. I'm pretty much half a casual when it comes to having more interest in UFC, but you got to tip your cap to Cyborg here for, again, having the odds be a little bit closer and yet get two finishes. So if it's left up to me, which it seems like it is, let's go ahead and make our female champ of the year, Chris Cyborg.
Chris Justino is the winner of this award. And I mean, John, yeah, I'm definitely in agreement with you here. You look at those performances, it's like she didn't even miss a step. And it was really awkward, her departure from the UFC. There were a lot of mean things said, just like Dana White's hit piece on the media recently. He'll go after whoever he wants to try and bring him down a nudge. But the really impressive thing about Chris Cyborg was the four belts. I mean, we've never seen the Grand Slam champion before, and Cyborg was able to do it. So while you fix your bow tie, I'm going with Chris Cyborg for this award, and definitely very deserving. Now, let's move into one of the more interesting categories that we do have. Let's get into the most improved fighter of the year.
Most improved fighter.
And listen, when it comes to most improved fighter of the year, we have so many honorable mentions that didn't make the top five. So let's go through them. Pani Kianzad, her win over Sajara Eubanks very recently, amazing, but she had a great 2020, continues to make moves and start grooves, as the Otara Millionaires Club would have said back in the late 90s. But she's looked amazing since The Ultimate Fighter. Pani Kianzad definitely deserving of a shout. And that one coming from a friend of the show, Drake Riggs. So make sure you check him out. He is the authority on not just women's MMA, but really making moves. Again, if you want some coverage on Ryzen 26 that's coming up, Drake Riggs, definitely one of those guys as well. Corey Sandhagen. Listen, win, lose, or draw, Corey Sandhagen, very important fighter that you have to watch. But his win and his comeback against Marlon Moraes, great knockout. And there was definitely some improvements in striking in that fight. We have Ciryl Gane. Unfortunate, again, that he only fought once. Maybe he would be on this list. But the knockout of Junior Dos Santos, you got to talk about it. Calvin Kattar, two really big wins to his credit. He's going to be taking on Max Holloway early in January of this year. Again, continuing to make strides. Drew Dober, a guy that, again, a couple of years ago, couldn't make lightweight. What's the scoop, Drew? And all of a sudden, the hack press win huge. The win in his last fight, the Alexander Hernandez won, absolutely amazing. Drew Dober really primed for some big things. And finally, Bryce Mitchell. The Charles Rosa fight, amazing. The Andre Feely fight, not as amazing, but this guy continues to make big strides in the UFC. So guys, let's talk about this top five. John, I'm going to throw it over to you. We've got Moreno, Tybura, Vettori, Fiziev, and Holland. And I know a little bit later on, and I hope I'm not tipping my hand too far, there's some gym of the year conversation here with some of these guys. What really stands out to you about the top five of this most improved fighter category?
Well, obviously, you know, when you talk about Kevin Holland, I mean, he was our male fighter of the year. So for that reason, obviously you don't get to be male fighter of the year. You obviously wasn't up for it last year. So, you know, we're going to spread the wealth out a little bit here. And to be honest, he if he's in the top 10, he's just got in the top 10. So there are people that are more deserving. The guys that stuck out for me this year that really kind of made a mark and really put themselves on the map, if you will, is Fiziev and Vettori. Like, Vettori seemed like he really made that push. We talked earlier about what happens at 85 if Adesanya goes away. Marvin Vettori happens at 85. And perhaps Marvin Vettori and Kevin Holland happen at 85 if Adesanya goes away. Fiziev, just this guy who, you know, you talk about a guy like Damian Maia, right, who it's like he just turns over the hourglass and the sand starts going through until he gets your neck or your arm or something. You could say the same thing about Fiziev on the feet. His last fight, it seemed like he was just kind of toying around with the guy. He was hanging in. Next thing you know, he knocks him dead. So Fiziev is that kind of guy on his feet. Tybura, I'll leave Tybura for you. Brandon Moreno, because I don't have any interest in him in this category. But Brandon Moreno for me, and again, I hate to be the guy that continues to tip his hand, but Moreno went, listen, you've been saying this kid's name all year, right, before this year. But he's the only one of this group that got himself into a title fight. Right, that went from a guy who was sort of a young prospect, if you will, kind of a little bit above a contender series type guy, all the way to the belt, all the way to a championship type fight. So to me, that's what sticks out to me about this group.
Matt, let's throw it over to you because we have to. I mean, you look at the fight that Brandon Moreno had against Pantoja before leaving the UFC, has the one-off with LFA, comes back, has a draw against Askar Askarov. We've been tooting the horn of Askar Askarov since ACB, since the Twister. Like, we've really been pumping his tires. I know I picked him to win that fight. Brandon Moreno puts on a great performance. You could definitely make an argument that he won that fight. That was 2019. Beats Kai Kara France, beats Jussie Formiga, beats Brandon Royval. Those are in 2020. And then has the draw against Deiveson Figueiredo. Say what you will, whether or not he won that fight. I don't care about the argument. Matt, Brandon Moreno. Is he at the top of the pops here?
Yeah, I don't know how he can't be. And you say the Kai Kara France win. Yes, it was last year, but let's just consider this one calendar year. So he fights Kai Kara France December 14th, 2019. He wins that fight, really impressive performance. Then he fights Jussie Formiga. Great win. That was in March. So then he comes out, fights Brandon Royval. That was that weird situation because he was supposed to fight Perez. Perez ends up getting the title shot. TKO's Royval. And then December 12th. So he does all four of those fights within 1 year. And he has a draw with a champ who no one thought he had a chance to beat. And we talked about this for our female champ of the year. The odds do matter. And the fact that he was such a big underdog to Figueiredo, everyone counted him out. And I know, listen, we love Brandon Moreno probably more than anyone outside of his immediate family. We didn't even think he was going to have a chance in that fight. And for him to perform the way that he did, and not only perform to such a level that rewarded him for a draw, but he's going to get the next fight and the odds are going to be a lot closer. Like, Brandon Moreno has a real chance to be the champ by the end of 2021. He might not beat Figueiredo all that impressively. He might not get that fight right away, but there's a real chance Brandon Moreno going from the most improved fighter this year, he could even be fighter of the year next year, just depending on how that title shot goes. So I have no problem at all giving this to Brandon Moreno.
And again, shouts, Marcin Tybura is a fun one because he had that Jan Blachowicz type run there where he was losing to the upper echelon of competition. You sprinkle in a win, and then all of a sudden he's on a giant win streak, finishing Greg Hardy. Like, Marcin Tybura, for me, definitely deserves to be there. you look at Marvin Vettori and King's MMA, and what can you say about Marvin Vettori? I mean, the guy is beating the brakes off poor baby K. Carl Roberson. He goes into a short notice main event against Jack Hermanson, and that left hand like a piston, just continuing to shoot his shot. He looked amazing. His cardio was there too. You look at Fazeev, the win that he had to start the year over Mark Jakacy, that was one that bit us in the ass, Matt. We said, listen, this is without a doubt a lock of the night. Mark Jakacy is going to beat Fazeev. Fazeev looked amazing in that fight, fight of the night there, and then finishes Renato Moicano. And then for Kevin Holland, I mean, it's neck and neck. Again, he's our male fighter of the year. But again, like John Franklin said, you got to spread the wealth. So for us, Brandon Moreno, your most improved fighter of the year, definitely deserving to the fighter coming out of Mexico. Let's parlay that into our comeback of the year. And I'm really excited to talk about this one.
Comeback of the year.
And so for comeback of the year, you saw it up on the screen, and we've talked about a couple of these fighters beforehand. We're talking Mackenzie Dern. I mean, again, coming off of the pregnancy, she had the one win. You think back to the loss against Amanda Ribas. It is what it is. Her 2020 was absolutely amazing. She definitely deserved to be in female fighter of the year category, but for comeback of the year, just continues to put on very good performances, moving up the ladder at 115 pounds. You're looking at Brian Ortega, a guy that came off of knee surgery. He had been away for a very long time. And factor in especially the fight at UFC 231 against Max Holloway. He got beaten so badly. So for him to come back, the improvements in the striking, absolutely amazing. Cody Garbrandt, the knockout losses, comes back against the Sun Tzu, throwing hands like, I don't know what, like a vintage John Lineker, and absolutely puts out a Sun Tzu. Great stuff from him. Conor McGregor, away from the sport for so long. And I don't care if it's Donald Cerrone. I think he's deserving to be in here. And John Franklin with KSW, Mehmet Khalidov definitely deserves to be here. Reason why, he had three straight losses. Narkun Ashkam. He had some personal legal issues in the past. He comes back, and we're probably going to talk about it later on. Runs across the cage, jump switch kick against Askham, knocks him flat against the cage, and then wins the fight. It was absolutely amazing. Mehmet Khalidov, at a later age, there was a long time where this guy was the greatest middleweight to never be in the UFC. Yeah, who didn't want to see him fight Anderson Silva at the height of his prime? Mehmet Khalidov definitely deserving to be in this list. John Franklin, is there a clear-cut winner here? Or does somebody rack up as maybe like a close second?
You know, I think there's... It's interesting because, listen, I got nothing against Khalidov. No, let's not go down that road. So I think that, see, Cody Garbrandt to me reminds me a little bit of the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? They got it. They came out undefeated. We thought it was right to the Super Bowl. Cody Garbrandt came out undefeated and then was like, man, did we just figure this guy out? Like, what happened? He beats Dominic Cruz and then it's like, okay, Dillashaw, I get maybe Dillashaw's got his number and then we find out he pops. But then Munoz knocks him out in the first round. It's like, is this kid even who he thought he was? And then he comes back against the Sun Tzu. So in terms of a career resurgence, listen, the losses to Dillashaw are enough to put you out of the sport. Like we talked about earlier with Esparza, we talked about Bisping. But then getting knocked out in the first round, it's like you got to start looking in the mirror and figuring out who you are. So for that kid to come back and do what he did was impressive. Listen, set himself up for a title shot in a different weight class. As far as, you know, Dern with the pregnancy, I'm not going to sit here and speak about having knowledge of pregnancies or all that. I mean, after kids, like bouncing back from that and getting back to fighting shape, much less, you know, postpartum and all that sort of stuff cannot be underappreciated at all. Brian Ortega, though, and you touched on it, it's not just the injury. It's the injury coming off of the fight. I mean, you're fighting a guy that's showing you how to defend him, right? And now you're turned into a meme. Like, how there could not have been a worse performance than the one he put on against Max Holloway. So then on the heels of that, next thing you know, when I'm getting ready to come back and restart my engine, I'm injured. Now I got to deal with that. Yeah, it's a pretty stacked category. You can make cases for everybody up and down.
Now, Matt, got to tip our hand here. With Brian Ortega, he's originally supposed to compete 1 year after UFC 231. He's supposed to take on the Korean Zombie, and then it fell. So Frankie Edgar and gets finished. And the lore of the Korean Zombie is back and in full force. Brian Ortega, oddly enough, didn't have his main cornerman, his main coach in the corner for the fight against the Korean Zombie and Henner Gracie. He wasn't able to make it. Brian Ortega looked like a totally different fighter. I mean, yes, there were some people in the comments section that said Brian Ortega is going to blow the doors off the Korean Zombie and striking is going to be totally improved. I don't think anybody knew that Brian Ortega was going to look like that in that cage. Matt, I got to do this. The award's got to go to Brian Ortega, but can you elaborate on this one?
Yeah, and this can be really short, really sweet. I thought Brian Ortega was going to die. Not like really die, but I didn't think this fight was going to be competitive in the least bit because it had all the building blocks for a failure on Brian Ortega's behalf. Because when you look, okay, Brian Ortega, he's great on the ground, but so is the Korean Zombie. He has good stand-up, but it's not like he can outbox the Korean Zombie. And Zombie's been going out and basically just blowing the doors off everyone. He's got great power in his hands, and he's really technical on the feet. And for Brian Ortega to just go out there and box his ears in pretty much, like, it was an absolute masterclass of a performance. You kept on saying he looked different, probably because he cut off about 6 feet worth of hair. He did look very different by the time he got to the cage, but with the bad weight cut, with all the storylines leading up to that fight, I don't know how you can't give it to Brian Ortega. Like John had said, he was getting shown how to defend punches in his previous fight. Like, he didn't just lose to Max Holloway. He got embarrassed in that fight. And for him to come back and look like this completely new and reinvented fighter, I believe that Brian Ortega can get a title one day. And that's not something I ever thought I would have said after the Max Holloway fight.
All right, so we continue rolling along into yet another one of the most interesting categories that we have here, the Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year.
And guys, for Rookie of the Year, I mean, you saw the names pop up on the screen. Adrian Yanez, Contender Series knockout over Victor Rodriguez in the UFC. Ilya Topuria, this guy looks like the real deal, coming out of Spain, Georgia, and a little bit of Germany, as the UFC would bill him. Chaos Williams, say what you will about the loss to Michelle Pereira at the end. I mean, again, you can make a case for either guy, but the two knockouts to start his UFC career, absolutely amazing. And Joaquin Buckley, again, lost to Kevin Holland in his debut, but you saw something special out of that fighter in Joaquin Buckley. He definitely has to be on this list. Guys, again, we talk one-horse races. Is this one too much of a one horse race? Matt, I'll start with you.
Let's be honest, there's a lot of exciting prospects in the UFC right now, and I do think we kind of nod our hat to a lot of those. Again, Adrian Yanez, he's an exciting prospect. Ilya Topuria is an exciting prospect. Same thing with Buckley. Khamzat Chimaev could be fighting for a title within the next like 8 months, and no one else on that list can say that. And for Chimaev, it's not like he was just a big deal inside the UFC. Like, he was making somewhat mainstream news because of the way he was able to dispatch his opponents. When stats come out that you're outlanding guys in the hundreds to their one or two significant strikes landed in a fight, shows a certain level of dominance that we rarely see from any fighter, much less just a Rookie of the Year. So I do think this is one of the easier awards to give away, and giving it to Khamzat Chimaev. He could be nominated for Fighter of the Year. He could be nominated for quite a few of these awards.
John Franklin, Adrian Yanez had a great start. Topuria had a great start. Williams did, and then he lost. Joaquin Buckley lost, and then he won. And I mean, knockout of the year? Maybe. You'll have to wait and find out. Khamzat Chimaev is that hot thing with the UFC. And this isn't a guy that's been around for a long time.
You know, the thing about Chimaev that's interesting is that very rarely, and this is a sport where all kinds of guys and gals come and go with all kinds of performances, impressive performance of the nights and all that. But only a rare few end up getting that boogeyman status, right? Joanna had it. The person that no one wants to fight, no matter what they say. They'll call him out only if they know they won't get the fight. The guys that might get the fight, their quiet is kept. And I think that Chimaev's reached that. And like Matt said, I mean, to go from being a rookie and saying the pandemic as an opportunity is a horrible thing to say. But, you know, there are people who use the fact that they're willing to turn over quickly. You know, we were talking about that Mershar fight being a legit fight. Like, we said with Greg Hardy, right? And even Greg Hardy was never the boogeyman. It was like, oh, wait till he gets to this guy. That'll set Hardy straight. We said with Mershar, wait till Chimaev gets to Mershar. That'll set them straight. Things will level out. Everything will start to be, you know, come back down to reality. Then he walked across the cage and knocked him dead. And then the hype grew even further. Chimaev is on that Masvidal kind of run where everything he touches is gold, and it just seems to keep trending up. And you can't realistically figure out where his level is quite yet. Is this guy an all-timer, or is he just catching the right opponents? So, Craig, make it official.
That 2020 Rookie of the Year status goes to Khamzat Chimaev. Nobody more deserving. I mean, three performance of the night bonuses, three big finishes, three big wins. Looks absolutely amazing. And I mean, again, Matt, you touched on it, the fact that he could be your fighter of the year. He could be nominated for so many different categories here, and maybe he will be. But Khamzat Chimaev, definitely your Rookie of the Year.
Move of the Year.
All right, so we are talking about Move of the Year, and I could not be more excited about this category. We have a couple of fighters in here that didn't even get nominated. Honorable mentions, Jimmy Flick, the flying triangle over Cody Durden. Amazing. He wasn't winning that fight at that point. Threw that one up. I jumped out of my seat. I thought that it was great. Khamzat Chimaev knocking out Gerald Meerschaert. One punch. See you later. That's definitely deserving a Move of the Year, but it's not even in our top five. Jordan Leavitt slam over Matt Wyman. I mean, I was afraid for Matt Wyman's life. That's not a joke. Like, I'm dead serious. That was scary stuff. And for Jordan Leavitt to do that in an MMA fight, unprecedented, unrivaled, great one. Aaron Pico over John DeJesus. I don't know if I've seen somebody go full extension in a right hand since the Iceman before the Tito Ortiz 3 fight. So Aaron Pico coming back with Bellator, amazing stuff. Keeping it with Bellator, though, and for our nominees, AJ McKee did a submission that nobody's ever seen before over a former champion in Darian Caldwell. The guy's still undefeated. And if you ever had any questions about AJ McKee coming into this tournament, the guy continues to prove the doubters wrong. Amazing stuff. McGregor's shoulder strikes, though they didn't finish the fight. Amazing stuff. From Hot Rod John Franklin, who's turned even more red as the show's gone along, Mehmet Kaladov over Scott Ashcombe. I got to whet your appetite there. That jumping switch kick, like, I still can't fathom it. It's a shame, though, that that happened on the same day when Joaquin Buckley knocked out Impa Kasanganai. And oh, by the way, Cody Garbrandt, again, you talk about that sweet sound of a baseball hitting a baseball bat. Cody Garbrandt's full spin into poor Rafael Assuncao right at the end of the round. Ding. And then Keith Peterson's in there waving it off. And whether or not he smelled like cigarettes or booze, I don't know. But that was a great comeback for Garbrandt, a great finish. Guys, again, we talk about a one-horse race. This one's a little bit more interesting. So Hot Tamale, John Franklin. It's a tricky one. What do you like about some of these picks here?
I've been listening to a lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers lately, so I'll defer to that as the nickname. For me, it's a two-horse race. I mean, there's the obvious one. To me, it's one of two things. What sort of ripple effect does the move have? Like, is it a meme? Is it all over Twitter? Is it all this stuff? That's Buckley. What do you feel in the moment? When Cody Garbrandt got that knockout, you're like, oh, my God, this guy's back. I thought there was no chance he was going to win the fight. I was reaching the point where I was starting to worry about his own safety, and then we get the knockout. So for me, it came down to the two for those two different reasons.
Matt, I'm going to insert a clip here of our original prediction video for the fight that Buckley had after the Kasanganai fight, because Impa Kasanganai has been relegated to, I don't even know what status anymore. Like the third tier of, what is it, Champions League? Lower than that. Like, everybody's forgotten about Impa Kasanganai. Kanye West released a track over Joaquin Buckley knocking out Impa Kasanganai. How wild is that? I have to say one thing before we give this one away. AJ McKee created a move that nobody's seen before. That's amazing. It was such a good year for MMA. Now, Matt, the floor is yours.
Okay, so John talked about the excitement in the moment of seeing Cody Garbrandt knock out Rafael Assuncao, and I agree. The way that he hit him and just the way that Assuncao kind of reacted to it and looked like he got shot, that was amazing. But that did not compare to the excitement I felt when I clicked on a video that Kanye West put on Twitter and the words, oh, we ain't never no joke. Nah, nah, nah.
Knock
nah, 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 nah. Nah, nah, nah. Came on, and it was just a loop of Joaquin Buckley doing a Matrix spin ninja kick on poor Ipaka Sanganai. And the only part in that video was that knockout on a loop and Anakin Skywalker getting cut in half by Obi-Wan Kenobi on top of a Kanye West track. That's your move of the year. If Yeezy himself is releasing new music because of your knockout, I think you deserve move of the year.
Move of the year, of course, this year going to none other than Joaquin Buckley. He's been up for what? Rookie of the year. He's been up for quite a few awards and none more deserving than Joaquin Buckley. The move goes to him. Now, our next category, I'm really looking forward to it. This is, of course, Gym of the Year.
Gym of the Year.
Guys, for Gym of the Year, we have five definite deserving candidates. Now, this is one of the ones that we threw out there to the fans with Fight Night Picks over on YouTube, and there were so many different comments underneath this one. I mean, I can't even begin to start. We had 44 different comments, 1,700 votes, and out of the four that we threw out there on the YouTube comments section, community section, 56% going City Kickboxing, 22% going AKA, 9% going Kings, 5% going Sanford, a further 9% going with the other explained below. The All-Stars popped up. There were a couple of different ones. But guys, the five that we have, Kings MMA, City Kickboxing, American Top Team, Sanford MMA. If you're not familiar, they rebranded. They got a deal with Sanford Health. They were Hard Knocks 365. They were other things before that. They're now Sanford MMA with Henry Hooft and Tiger Muay Thai. And guys, I got to say, the one that came up the most in the comments section for other explained below was Tiger Muay Thai. I mean, the Hickman brothers and everybody involved over there, Fazeev, you name it, that gym has continued to make strides. It's a destination for so many different fighters. We saw Khalil Roundtree go over there, and then all of a sudden, he's a totally new fighter. We saw Ian Heinisch train a little bit with Tiger Muay Thai. Comes back to the States and looks amazing over Gerald Meerschaert. But there's a lot of gyms that are definitely deserving. John Franklin, I'm going to throw this one over to you. Again, is this one really clear-cut? How do you see this?
Well, I think it's fairly clear-cut, but here's the thing that I want to talk about as the resident old head here on the panel, which is that this is not what you, with the exception of American Top Team and a little bit Kings, this is not what you would see. I mean, gone are the Jackson Winks, and gone are some of these, you know, traditional, you know, I mean, I live in Phoenix, The Lab and Fight Ready, like all these camps that have forever been just producing champions. I think there's sort of a new breed of gym moving in. So, yeah, I think with the amount of champions that City Kickboxing has, it seems like it's their sort of category to lose. But there's some depth. There's a little bit more depth maybe in some of these other gyms, so it makes it interesting.
That's a very good point, too. And, I mean, if you look at the roster at City Kickboxing, it's Volkanovski, it's Israel Adesanya, the biggest guy in the sport, Brad Riddell, good fighter, Shane Young, didn't win his last fight, and then you go down through the list and it gets a little
Dan Hooker thinner.
Dan Hooker right up there at the top. Again, I was just trying to focus on some of the rest of the fighters. It gets a little sketchy, but again, Kings is there. You look at Giga Chikadze, you look at the year that Marvin Vettori had, we can go down through the list. I mean, Benil Dariush, he could be up for some of these awards as well, and I've seen it on other shows. Matt, again, it's a tricky one. We didn't even include AKA in this top ranking. And what about Canada's TriStar? What happened to Firas and the team? We just haven't really seen them lately. What about SBG Ireland? Where are they in their conglomerate of gyms that also, you know, kind of go worldwide? Matt, when picking this one, and I'll let you make the pick, is there really a clear-cut winner here?
I think it is. And we just have to ask ourselves, okay, who are the big three of every gym mentioned right now? And when you go to Kings, Merv Vettori had a great year, but he's a middleweight right now. And then you look at, well, who's City Kickboxing's best fighter? It's Israel Adesanya, the best middleweight in the world right now. Then you look at, okay, Kings MMA, Giga Chikadze is pretty good. Well, Alexander Volkanovski is the champion of the division that Chikadze is in. So when you just look at the top of all these divisions, City Kickboxing is either champ or they are having guys who are making their way up the divisions. Dan Hooker, he's got that fight with Michael Chandler. So he's only, what, two fights away from potentially a title shot. He's right in the mix of the elite. Brad Riddell, rumored to be fighting Gregor Gillespie. If he gets that win, like, he's moving right up there too. So City Kickboxing, they have the biggest star in the world. They have a guy who gets no respect, even though he's one of the best pound for pound fighters in the world, and Alexander Volkanovski. And they do have a steady stable of other fighters. So it's not just like they're all that top heavy. I think it has to go to City Kickboxing this year.
So let's give it to Eugene Behrman and the crew at City Kickboxing. That is your gym of the year. But guys, we're not done talking about gyms. Let's parlay this one into the trainer slash coach of 2020.
Trainer, coach of the year.
And when we talk about trainer and coach of the year, and this is where it really gets a little sketchy. I mean, are we talking Factory X? Are we talking Evolution? Are we talking about some of the gyms that we did mention before? Maybe Frost a Hobby, maybe John Kavanaugh. No, the five that we have up in front of us, well, I guess with Elevation, you have Trevor Whitman, Travis Luter, the Hickman brothers with Tiger Muay Thai. You got to consider George and Frank as a package deal with wrestling and MMA. Jason Perillo from Ruka Sport and Eric Albarrison. And that's where it gets a little weird because in the graphic that I put up, Eric Albarrison, great coach. The picture that I put up was from late last year. His champions, Henry Cejudo, retired. You had Patricio Pitbull only fighting once. Patricky, what's going on? Paulo Costa didn't really win his title fight. But Travis Luter, I mean, Kevin Holland, dare I say more? Trevor Whitman continues to do the damn thing. The Hickman brothers really making strides. Jason Perillo doing a lot of great things. John Franklin, tell me about this category from 2020.
This gets really interesting for me because, you know, again, some of these guys, I don't want to call them specialists. First, let me talk about the Hickman brothers. I'm very interested, intrigued, impressed, any other I words you can think of, with what they did with City Kickboxing and establishing a relationship. If you want to know more about that relationship, check out The Body Lock. They wrote a great story on it. But, you know, how they kind of worked with some fighters and what they've done coming out of nowhere, really, and establishing themselves is amazing. Perillo, I mean, we got some of the work he's doing with Mackenzie Dern. Obviously, we named Chris Cyborg our female champion of the year. She trains with Jason Perillo. So Perillo, I mean, he's been around for a while. Michael Bisping, Tito Ortiz, BJ Penn, the list goes on for him. Luter with Holland, Whitman with Gaethje, getting Gaethje all the way to a title shot this year. Rose Namajunas has had title shots. So I think that Whitman gets a little bit propped up because of the UFC gig. But like you said, Albarrison, obviously, you know, Cejudo retired, but he retired on top. So it's a choice to walk away. He was still being coached very effectively. The Pitbull brothers, Costa, there. I would say that if you started counting who has the most people near championship level, Albarrison might be your guy. But if we talk about depth, it might be a different story.
Matt, are you going to make an argument for any one of these in this top five that might not be an overly popular pick?
I really do think Jason Perillo deserves a lot of credit for the advancements in the striking of Mackenzie Dern. And I think it comes down to the fact that Mackenzie Dern, it's not that she was just unpolished in her striking. Her striking was downright bad when she entered the UFC. And you just look at the improvements that she has been able to make. Like, Ben Simmons is an all-star level NBA player who has yet to develop a jump shot, and he's had 4 years to do that. Mackenzie Dern went from not knowing how to even lay a ball in to now being like a decent three-point shooter. That's the type of improvement that she has been able to make. And she's a lot better defensively. She's a lot better with her own offense. I think he's been able to take a lot of fighters who are sort of in the more developmental parts of their career and really being able to build a lot upon it. But I do think when you talk about the trainer and or coach of the year, you do have to get it to Eric Albarrison, just what he's been able to do. And when you look at the roster of fighters that he has, like we said, Cejudo retired on top. That was his choice to do that. And Albarrison was a huge reason as to why Cejudo got to that point in the first place. And also, he actually promotes his fighters. He does something outside of just training his fighters. He's a guy who will go on Ariel Helwani and pump up Paulo Costa's tires or Henry Cejudo's tires. Like, he will do more than he has to with just the X's and O's of the game. He'll go out of his way to promote his fighters, and I think that has to be taken into consideration as well.
I mean, people love my weird basketball references. I talked about Channing Frye on some of these shows before. Who saw that one coming? But Matt, you're right. With Jason Perillo, you look at some of the advancements you've seen in Mackenzie Dern's game. She turned from Jose Calderon into like Spud Webb, just dunking over everybody. So great work for Jason Perillo. But again, for me, I'm in agreement here. Eric Albarrison, what gym is he really affiliated with? Is it Pitbull Brothers? Is it one of the gyms that John, you know, so well over in Phoenix? It's really tough to try and pin him down, but the proof's in the pudding. I mean, look at Alara Jawani to kind of further Matt's point. Who knew Alara Jawani coming into Bellator? I mean, nobody. And this is a guy that decided, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go out to the gift shop. We're going to get some old timey looking, paper. We're going to write down an Arya Stark kill list. I'm going to give my fighter a nickname. And then if she wins, she's going to have a kill list to pump her own tires. These are some of the things that this guy does that are kind of outside of the realm of trainer or coach. But then when you look at the advancements that his fighters have been able to make, is he a great wrestling coach? 100%. But there's just little intangibles there that Eric Albarrasson brings into this game. And maybe 2019 was more his year, but 2020, there was definitely a carryover effect. I definitely consider him the coach slash trainer of the year. Let's give this award to Eric Albarrasson. John Franklin, let's hear from you here.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about Albarrasson. I think one of the things is the fact that you think or that you stated that you can't pin him down, I think says a lot more about the guy. He goes where his fighters want him to go. And here's the news. It's not like Fight Ready has nothing going on. Santino DeFranco is the coach there. Tracy Cortez is out of there. The zombie fight's out of there. So, I mean, like, there are things happening to Fight Ready. He could just stick around Fight Ready and start attaching himself to prospects looking for the next one. But he's like, you know, I'm going to go to Brazil and train with the Pitbull Brothers. I'm going to go where Costa is. Maybe he'll come to me. I think that says a lot about who he is as a coach and dedication he gives to his top-level fighters. It doesn't mean that he doesn't try and pretend like he's going to be around Fight Ready holding pads for someone who's 4-0 in the regionals. He's like, listen, I built this thing with Cejudo. I have relationships with these guys, and this is where we're going. And I appreciate that about him.
Eric Albarrasson, let's see what he's got coming up in 2021, but he is our 2020 coach slash trainer slash coach of the year. Let's move into some of the big hitters, some of the big categories. Next up, we're looking at performance of the year.
Performance of the year.
And guys, performance of the year, a really tricky award to give away. And it's one that we really kind of have to go a little inside baseball. Do you look at the quality of opponent? Do you look at the way that they beat their opponent? Does a finish count more than just an absolute bloodbath or five-round assault or a great three-round fight? There's a lot of deserving fighters here. Two of the fighters that we had to unfortunately leave out of our top five, Petr Yan's win over Jose Aldo was absolutely amazing. I mean, you want to compare it to a boxer, and it's an overused boxing comparison. You look at the way that Floyd Mayweather fights and downloads his opponent's game plan and then just goes after them, especially the MMA comparison with Conor McGregor. Did he let him coast a little bit at the start and then beat the brakes off him? Petr Yan against Jose Aldo, definitely deserving. And Glover Teixeira's win over Thiago Santos, no. What about the one that he had over Anthony Smith? He was losing teeth. That one was amazing. But guys, our top five, we have Brian Ortega and the Korean Zombie. I mean, Brian Ortega, our comeback fighter of the year. We have Vadim Nemkov. That head kick against Ryan Bader, and then he just kept going. And Bader would get up, and then he just kept going until the referee had to end the fight. We're talking Figueiredo Benavidez number two, where he just sunk everything, hit every spot. Gaethje over Ferguson, Khabib over Gaethje, and then Gilbert Burns just beating down poor Tyron Woodley. I mean, I got hyped up by the Joyner Lucas song and the montage for Woodley coming back. I took all the Wolf Cola and the Wolf tickets for that one. I thought Woodley was going to be back to normal. Gilbert Burns, have yourself a 2020 guy, but have yourself a performance there. Matt Allen, we're talking performance of the year. This is a really tough category to try and figure out a winner.
Oh, it 100% is. And I think it does matter what you put more stock into. Does a quick finish over a really good opponent tell me a lot about a fighter? Not really. It just tells me that they can get lucky quick or that they can just land a good power shot. What Gilbert Burns was able to do to Tyron Woodley was unlike what we had ever really seen Tyron Woodley lose from. And I know a lot of people try to compare the Covington, the Usman, and the Burns fight as to how to beat Tyron Woodley. Gilbert Burns beat him better than both of those guys. And I know MMA math doesn't really matter, but the fact that Burns was able to go out there, he dominated him on the feet. He was able to drop him on the feet. He gets in a full mount on the ground, and he out-wrestles Tyron Woodley. He dominated him in all three stages of a fight, in the grappling, in the wrestling, and in the striking. It wasn't even competitive. And the fact that he wasn't underdog going into that, I think, does just kind of put Gilbert Burns' performance over the edge. The other two that I do think should be considered for the finalists is what Gaethje was able to do to Tony Ferguson. We all remember how hyped up that event was. UFC 249, that's the return of sports. Everything had got shut down. They were fighting in Florida. Everyone was excited, too. We were supposed to be getting Gaethje versus Ferguson. Khabib versus Ferguson, the long promised title fight, probably going to be the greatest fight ever. We end up getting Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson. It was hyped up as, oh, this can be one of the most violent fights ever. And it was. It was just one of the most one-sided title fights ever as well. And a lot of people like to point to that as, oh, it was fight of the year. This is a fight of the year nominee. Let's be honest, that was performance of the year worthy. It was competitive from the standpoint that Ferguson landed that one uppercut, but for the most of those 24 and a half minutes, it was Justin Gaethje landing overhand rights and left hooks on Tony Ferguson. And last but not least, what Khabib did to Justin Gaethje is basically illegal everywhere outside of an MMA cage. It was not competitive, and not the way that we thought it would be. We all kind of knew, okay, if Khabib gets Gaethje to the ground, it's over. It's going to be a wrap. But we thought at least Gaethje would be able to defend some of those takedown attempts or land on the feet. Khabib absolutely dominated him in the stand-up, which is not something anyone thought we would see coming. And the second the fight hit the ground, it's not like Gaethje had some wrestling defense. Like, the second Khabib would commit to a takedown, he would get him down immediately, cut through his guard like it was nothing. And really what Khabib was able to do with all the baggage coming into that fight was extremely impressive this year.
John Franklin, these are all very difficult. I mean, Justin Gaethje on the winning end of one of these fights, on the losing end of one of the other ones. Listen, I have to tip my hand a little bit. Vadim Nemkov's win over Ryan Bader, awesome. It's not really up there on that level. Brian Ortega coming back and beating the Korean Zombie. It's our comeback of the year, and Brian Ortega's been in a couple of different categories. Maybe not up there for a performance of the year. Gilbert Burns over Woodley, Khabib over Gaethje, Gaethje over Ferguson. To me, those are huge. Figueiredo Benavidez too was great, but we already saw it happen once. It was just the cherry on top of a really strange cake. So, John, we've got those top three: Burns, Woodley, Khabib, Gaethje, Gaethje, Ferguson. Which one really sticks out to you, and which one is taking the cake in this instance?
Well, here's the thing, and this is unfair to Davis and Figueiredo, but the second Benavidez fight was really just Figueiredo saying, all right, you want me to make weight? Fine. I'll make the weight and I'll do this thing again. You know, it was like second verse, same as the first. But I think that this is unfair, but, you know, I'm going to tell the audience the same thing I tell my students and my kids. Life's unfair, so get used to it. So I got to take a little bit away from Gilbert Burns because of what I know of Tyron Woodley, which is the kid's washed, right? It's a wrap. So, yes, what Burns did is impressive, but Woodley, you know, this guy, time's up.
Falling in and out of love, in and out of love with you.
And then now here's the part where it gets really funky. Because of what Gaethje did to Ferguson, what Khabib did to Gaethje is even more impressive. And I think that the one thing that has not been mentioned yet, and I'll tell you why, not to lower the mood of the podcast, but, you know, I lost my dad before, and you're off for a long time. Khabib, my dad was not connected to what I did for a living, right? Khabib's dad was. Khabib never went into a fight without his dad. Okay, so now here's the first fight after you lost your dad in the middle of the pandemic, which is the reason you lost your dad, fighting the one guy who's unlike anyone you've ever fought. This is a kid that comes forward that we believe has some wrestling, although whoever sees it. You know, this is the guy that seems to be the antidote for who you are, and he's nowhere close to you. And it's the outcome is never in question. There's never a minute you think Khabib might lose this one. Once the fight started, it was a wrap. It was all Khabib. And with all those circumstances in place, knowing that he was probably going to retire if he won, having lost his father, and then putting on that type of performance, it was the best performance of his career, arguably, in the last fight of his career. And who gets to do that? So, performance of the year, Khabib Nurmagomedov over Justin Gaethje.
Gotta go to Khabib in this case. I mean, again, all the circumstances surrounding that fight, I gotta bring a little bit of levity. I don't know what John said about one pump chump, but the second time for me is never the best time. It's over and done with, and it's not that great. But for Khabib to get that win over Justin Gaethje, absolutely amazing. Again, we've overused the word masterclass, but if you want to show somebody pure domination at the highest level, again, second time's not the best, but that fight was absolutely insane. And the performance that he put on, knowing that his foot was injured, knowing that he didn't have his father in his corner, there's so many different intangibles around that fight. And Khabib Nurmagomedov definitely deserving of that award. So our performance of the year goes to Khabib Nurmagomedov over Justin Gaethje to cap off a crazy 2020. Now, Matt, you tipped our hand a little bit. We're talking most anticipated event of the year. You said UFC 249. Let's see who those nominees are.
Most anticipated event.
And there you have it, our top five nominees. And listen, we've had a lot of great cards, and there have even been fight night cards that could be deserving of this award. I mean, the last fight night of the year, probably one of the better cards we've had this year. But when we're talking most anticipated events of the year, KSW 57, three title fights on the night. I mean, UFC 251, we had three title fights. KSW 57, you had to fill the shoes of Mateusz Gamrot, who ended up with the UFC on the losing end of Guram Kutateladze. But KSW 57 up there. UFC 249, was it Khabib and Ferguson? Yeah, it's going to be Ferguson and Gaethje. You have UFC 254. I mean, what can we say about that card? Absolutely amazing. Big names on the marquee. And UFC 246, kicking off 2020. And we mentioned it, move of the year, McGregor shoulder strikes. And was it a typical McGregor card? Maybe, maybe not. There were some bigger names on that one for sure. John Franklin, as red as you are, and I need to know the story behind the weird accoutrement that you have around your neck. Maybe that's one for another day. John, we're talking most anticipated event of 2020. I'm assuming KSW 57, totally off the radar. Maybe Ryzen 26 takes the cake at the end of the year. Who knows? But what are you looking for in an anticipated event of 2020?
You know, did you want to talk about Ryzen? Is that what you're... Oh, okay. We'll talk about that some other time.
It's a good card.
Yeah, we'll talk about Ryzen when I talk about where this came from. Okay. You know, here's the thing. I think it depends on what you view as anticipation, right? So again, I'm the old head of the group. You really... No. It was built... The card was always built at the top. Back in the day, it was the poster. It was Tito and Chuck or Randy and Chuck or, you know, it was always built by the main event. Now we have some more depth and these things. Now, so I guess it's a matter of what you like. Do you like the top three fights, the main card, to be massive? If so, UFC 251's for you. Do you like the card to be like, you know, I guess if you were to compare it to albums, kids, they used to make these things called albums, right? And at the songs, do you want three massive songs or do you want a record or a tape or a CD that you just never stop listening to? That's UFC 249 for me, right? So I'm going to go ahead and list 249. Stop me when you don't want to watch the fight. Gaethje Ferguson, Cejudo Cruz, Ngannou Rozenstruik, Cater Stevens, Hardy DiCastro, Pettis Cerrone, Olenek Verdum, Esparza Watterson, Luke Price, Mitchell Rosa, Span Alvey. I mean, the things top to bottom fights you want to see, right? So, but it doesn't have the big fight at the top like 251 does. The three fights at the top like 251 does. So I guess it's a matter of preference. I'll turn it over to you guys. What's your preference?
And I mean, Matt, I got to say, you know, you talk about albums that only have one song. For me, it's Picture Book by Simply Red. And the only reason why I own that on vinyl is because of the song Holding Back the Years. I think it's a great banger from the 1980s. John?
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, it is a good song. And I do actually listen to it often. Now, Matt, I'm going to throw this one over to you because, again, when we're talking about most anticipated event of 2020, it's tough to not do the, well, hindsight's 2020 and all the fights were great. So that's the one that I'm going with. I want to talk excitement level. And just like John said, you know, we're looking at that marquee. We're looking at some of those names. What's the one event that really stood out to you? Now, I know 246 has McGregor. So for a lot of people, that could be your pick. And I wouldn't be upset about it. Let me know down below in the comments. But Matt, what are you going with here?
Okay, so you do have to kind of put yourself in the mindset of what was Fight Week like at that event. And for me, yes, okay, there's nothing like a Conor McGregor fight night. And I'm not the biggest Conor guy in the world. Everyone knows that. But there is a certain level of excitement when a big star is fighting in MMA. And same thing with Jon Jones. Like, am I a Jon Jones fan? Not at all. But it does feel special when you do have these big stars of the sport competing because it just seems like everyone else in the world is also excited for the fight. UFC 251 gave me Gilbert Burns versus Kamaru Usman that I was extremely excited for, and then on a week's notice took that fight away from me. So I'm at the lowest of lows as an MMA fan. The main event that I've really been looking forward to got canceled. So guess what I got treated to? I got treated to a picture of Jorge Masvidal, aka Street Jesus, in a pink bathrobe on an airplane with a pizza in his mouth saying, "I've got this, guys." And on that Monday, I was more excited than I was for any other one of these events. Because you have to think, I was still getting Piotr Jan versus Jose Aldo. I was still getting Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovski 2. I was still getting Jessica Andrade versus Rose Namajunas 2, which did end up becoming a Fight of the Year nominee. Again, at the time, it was hard to predict that. But still, that is a phenomenal fight and a rematch. And if we're still going down through the card, Yuri Prohakcha made his UFC debut on that card. Ruslan Salikov, Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos. Like, that was a phenomenal card, top to bottom. And the fact that we were still able to get one of the biggest stars in the UFC to step up on a week's notice in a fight that really was a stylistic nightmare for him. And no, the fight was terrible. It didn't end up becoming a Fight of the Year quality fight, but the anticipation leading up to that fight of, can Masvidal make weight? Can he actually have a chance at beating Usman? And if he does beat Usman, just what heights can his fame reach? I do think UFC 251 deserves to be our most anticipated event of the year.
100% agreement. I mean, M1 Global's champ, Roman Bogatov, taking on one of my bugaboos, one of my guys, Leonardo Santos, one of the guys I get excited about. There's so many low-key great fights on this. Makhwan Amir Khani, Danny Henry, Muslim Salikov, Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos. How hyped were fight fans and Strikers Paradise type fans for that fight? It's just going to be spinning shit. And then, to top off the prelims, Jiří Procházka is coming over to the UFC and he's going to fight no time Volkan Oezdemir. I mean, I say this as a joke, you know, do I get hired for this fight? Do I get up for this fight in the morning? Volkan Oezdemir, Jiří Procházka, you're darn tootin' I get excited for that fight. And then he boss Paige VanZant. All right, that's where it mellows out a little bit. But the four fights on top of that really top it off well. UFC 251, great fight card. That is our most anticipated event of 2020. Rolling on through, we probably have the most contentious of the awards coming up. We're talking about Analyst of the Year.
Analyst of the Year.
And guys, with Analyst of the Year, there might be one surprise entrant on this list. And I have to, you know, talk about this with full disclosure. And John Franklin, you could kind of help out here. We're talking about color commentators. We're not talking about play-by-play. So John Anik, not on this list. That is, however, why you'll find Daniel Cormier, Paul Felder, Dan Hardy, Michael Bisping, and Israel Adesanya. And it gets a little tricky. We put this one out there in the YouTube community tab. We did say, you know, who is your MMA analyst of the year? And we had another name who is an honorable mention from one championship, Mitch Chilson. 1,900 total votes, guys. 1% went with Mitch Chilson. There were a couple of different names that were thrown out there. 119 total comments from the Fight Night Picks crew. I really have to give an honorable mention to Magnus Jaikin Senblad, Swedish commentary. That's awesome, and I'm in agreement, but I don't speak Swedish. I know phonetically it's close to English, but I don't speak Swedish, so I can't comment on that. But Bisping, Adesanya, Hardy, Felder, Cormier, John Franklin, you're a baseball guy, right?
I am.
We always love the play-by-play, but it's those creepy, weird color commentators that can really add an extra element with baseball. But with MMA, totally different sport, and we get an added layer of depth. What's your take on this Analyst of the Year category for 2020?
Well, you know, I'll take it into another sport. I've been watching, the basketball season started. I was watching some highlights of the Bulls game, and it seemed like every time a Bulls player hit a jumper, their color commentator was like, "Sriracha," and he was saying all this, like, crazy stuff. So I don't know who it is. He's a fun guy. Here's where I think analyst gets interesting, because what you have to do is you have to give the fans the knowledge – but you have to be quirky too. They have to like you, right? And I guess the person that does that most effectively would be Daniel Cormier, meaning he's in the moment. He does the thug rose, but then he also knows immediately what's going to happen as it's happening. Dominic Cruz, so if he's dead center, right? Dominic Cruz may be a little bit too technical. Paul Felder might be a little bit too fun, right? So that's – or Joe Rogan might be a little too fun. You know, Cruz is a little too technical. So I think that's what it really boils down to. And everybody has their own favorite combination. Matt and I talk about this. You and I talk about this, Craig, about, like, at the end of the night, what do you think of these guys? We think of Fitzgerald, Bisbing, and whoever. So for me, yeah, it was an interesting year to see these guys develop. I really like – if we were going to have maybe most improved, it's Paul Felder. You know, Bisbing, although Bisbing is coming along as well. So I think this is a good five. And obviously the guy who makes it all interesting is Israel Adesanya, because the one time we've seen him do color commentary was the Tyson Jones fight, which isn't MMA, which makes us hipsters. But, you know, I liked what he did. You know, I thought it was interesting what he did. So what do you guys think? For me, this is an interesting group.
Matt, before I let you go, so 1,900 total votes, YouTube community section, 31% Cormier, 38% Felder, 19% Dan Hardy, other explain below get 11%. Bisbing's in there. There's a lot of different names. Now, Bisbing to me, again, we talk most improved. Bisbing definitely has to be up there. He's continued to make gains. Daniel Cormier is probably right up there based on the fact that fighters took corner advice from an analyst, used it in their fights, and won. It's a tricky one for me. What are your thoughts on this one?
So how John had mentioned, I don't know what the color name guy for the Chicago Bulls is. I know what it is for the Raptors, and that man's name's Matt Devlin, and he likes to yell out random Canadian cities when Toronto Raptors hit three-pointers.
That's the play-by-play guy. Their color commentator's Jack Armstrong.
No. But I'm proving this point. Matt Devlin will yell out different cities from Canada when the Raptors hit a three-pointer. I'll never forget where I was when Kawhi Leonard hit the first three-pointer of Game 7 against Golden State. He yelled from Fredericton. And just that little added tidbit that he added to the broadcast is something that I'm never going to forget about those NBA Finals. Each and every one of these guys in this category, I think, does have one of those things. Like, Daniel Cormier has that unnatural excitement that no one else on that list can really match. Whereas Paul Felder offers a little bit of both. He can give you that Dominic Cruz-esque kind of, oh, this is how you check leg kicks. These are underhooks and whatnot. But he can still be kind of fun. With Israel Adesanya, like we had mentioned, we only had the one little taste of him. But what we got from that Jones Jr. Mike Tyson fight was really positive. And I kind of like where Israel Adesanya is trending outside of just the MMA atmosphere. He's a guy who can reach out and become more of a mainstream star going forward. I do think that sort of commentary gig that he did for the boxing match, if you will, is going to get him a lot more exposure even within the UFC. And I can see him getting more opportunities like this within the UFC as his career progresses, just because of that one opportunity that he had.
Boys, oh boys, this is a tricky one. Again, Paul Felder. Maybe that one swayed by the fact that he cornered Jared Gordon and then he fought RDA, and he's also a commentator. Bisbing, Hall of Famer. Dan Hardy continues to make strides and point at Herb Dean. That's an all-time classic. So many deserving commentators and analysts that deserve to be in this category. But guys, I think we got to go with the hipster pick. Israel Adesanya put MMA on the map again at an event that was headlined by Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. And you look at the panel that they had, and I don't care how short notice it was. Mauro Ranallo, Pride, boxing, what have you, pro wrestling is one of the GOATs. To me, he is. He really is. And again, I'm a Canadian, so there's a little bit of bias there. Sugar Ray Leonard, an all-time great. You look at Snoop Dogg.
An all-time great.
Not a big Snoop Dogg guy, but an all-time great. To me, Israel Adesanya star shone the brightest that night. Out of all of those people, go ahead, John Franklin.
This is a very important point to make. I don't know that if you put the other guys in this category in Israel Adesanya's spot that night, if they would have done as well. And if you factor in that this was the first time he ever did it, he did the first time he ever did play-by-play was a shit show. And he did it seamlessly. He's a guy with an accent who was super clear the whole night, right? Which not everybody's able to do. You put Cormier in that spot, maybe he could pull it off. But Felder, Hardy, Bisbing, I think they would all just be reacting to the circumstances. And they would all just be like, you know, like Sugar Ray Leonard giving you the dead fish comments. And it just was too, it was all over the place. And I think Adesanya knew enough about what was going on to, like, make – there's no way, and I could be wrong, there's no way he scouted all those fighters ahead of time. I don't think. And yet he still knew what he was looking at. He still knew enough about what was going on to comment on all of the fights. I just think that people don't understand the degree of difficulty. If he can do that in that show, imagine what he could do in a UFC show where everything's laid out, they're structured, the director's done 100 of these. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that to me was the most impressive debut that you could possibly have. And the other, again, I'm belaboring the point, but here it is. Put those guys in Adesanya's shoes, they crash and burn. Put him in their shoes, he still does great.
It was absolutely amazing. And again, it might be a zag when we were supposed to zig, but Israel Adesanya, Analyst of the Year, one event, it wasn't in MMA, but MMA shone the brightest out of that night, and Nate Robinson definitely didn't. So the award for Analyst of the Year for 2020 is going to City Kickboxing's Israel Adesanya, your middleweight champion. And guys, we have a couple of great awards left. We're talking round of the year. We're talking fight of the year. This is the moment you've all been waiting for. Let's have a look at round of the year.
Round of the year.
Round of the year, guys. We're talking about it here, and we had some great fights. And will round of the year equate to a possible fight of the year? Maybe for some of these selections, but we had some amazing fights in 2020. And again, the UFC tended to shine a little bit brighter just based on the fact that they had events continuously throughout the year, save for a small stretch. We're talking about Zhang Weili and Yuan Ian Jacek's title fight. That fifth round, absolutely bonkers. The decision, maybe even factoring in a little bit, but it was a great round. Jessica Andrade, Rose Namajunas in the third round. Absolute pandemonium in that fight. Deiveson Figueiredo, Brandon Moreno, the fourth round, the most competitive round of a great fight, possible fight of the year for sure. Thiago Santos, Glover Teixeira's third round. Is Glover going to get knocked out cold? Is Glover going to come back and finish a fight? And oh, by the way, he did. You have to include that one in there. It was just a roller coaster of emotions, as some would say. And Dan Hooker, Dustin Poirier, that second round. Guys, I got to say this before I hand it off to you. We talked about Analyst of the Year. Bit of a hipster pick, but we went with Israel Adesanya. Michael Bisping, it has to be said, painted a Bob Ross-esque, and I'm not talking about Luis Pena, picture for that round. He got me so hyped up when I rewatched Hooker and Poirier. He really did such a great job in that one. So shouts to Michael Bisping for just adding to that experience. John Franklin, when you're looking at this round of the year category, it's a tricky one because we did have so many great fights this year.
Well, and I think the important thing to talk about in this round of the year is that these fights are all happening at the absolute top of the food chain, right? Every fight, every one of these fights has got real stakes. You know what I'm saying? They're either four belts or they're to get title shots or they're guys in Santos and Glover who have fought for the belt and are making their way back. Figgy Moreno was for the belt. Andrade and Rose, obviously champions there. Wiley and Jan Jacek. But Hooker Poirier, you know, you mentioned a book earlier. And listen, I don't throw this around lightly. Okay? Again, I'm the old head here. You mentioned the book earlier. I'm going to mention one too. All right? It's called Intimate Warfare. It's about Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward and their boxing trilogy. Okay? The only way that you could describe Hooker and Poirier in that second round is intimate warfare. That's Gatti and Ward at its height. And here's the thing about that round in rewatching it. This was Dan Hooker's fight in the first round. I mean, he had Dustin Poirier had established no respect between himself and Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker was coming forward, walking him down, and then Poirier said, this is going to just be a Louisiana street fight. That's what we're getting into here. And the amount of huge shots that both of these guys absorbed in that round, body, head, just, I mean, and Poirier was like technical, but at the same time, just, you know, throwing snowballs, throwing fastballs at Hooker. I mean, he was just tossing left and right. It was at the same time a beautifully technical round and bedlam. And that's what the best fights are. 1 minute when you think they're just throwing haymakers like a couple of drunk idiots in the alley, then they go to the body or then they make some adjustments. You know, it's just, it was a beautiful round. And again, not to tip hands here, but it's like, and this is to take nothing away from the other fights. But man, these guys put on something special.
Now, Matt, it has to be said that, you know, you and I, cold climate, it's cold up here. I throw a snowball at you, you throw a snowball at me. And if there's not ice in it, we don't hit each other in the ice, probably not going to be that bad. So to back up John Franklin's point, cinder blocks, wrecking balls, what have you. It was absolutely insane. Matt, again, tipping our hand a little bit. I'm going to give away the award. Hooker Poirier in that second round, and it's probably going to be a unanimous thing across all of these shows. But again, like I said, Bisping painted the picture. You just had to sit back and watch. It was as enjoyable to watch today and yesterday and the day before. I didn't do the Luke Thomas 49 times, but I watched it 4 or 5 times. I'm on the edge of my seat the whole time. It's amazing.
It really is a phenomenal fight. The whole fight's great, but this round in peculiar. It's just so good because you see what both fighters can offer you. And I know I just made up a word like Charles Barkley.
No, it's the wrong spot.
Okay. What Dan Hooker was able to do in this round, really in this fight, was he was building constantly. And like John said previously, Dustin Poirier just couldn't reach Dan Hooker. He couldn't get inside of the range of Hooker. Hooker was throwing knees. He was staying really long. But in that second round, and I know we gave out our first team all MMA, Dustin Poirier's first team all bar fight. Like, if I'm throwing down in a Buffalo Wild Wings, he's probably the guy who I want with me. Because everything he throws is trying to knock you out. And I think it was Ariel Helwani who had said this right after the fight. And I think it's a really good point. Going into this fight, there was no crowd. And we're used to having no crowd at Contender Series events. Contender Series fighters don't have the same sound on their shots that Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker do when they land. Like, every time these guys would land punches on each other, it sounded like two baseball bats were hitting. And this whole round, it's back and forth. Poirier's landing absolute bombs over the top. And then Dan Hooker has a 30-second period where he lands about 45 punches and knees to the head of Dustin Poirier at the end of the round. And Poirier's just kind of standing there with his hands on his knees like, well, damn, I'm in another one of these kind of fights. And from there, it stays at this crazy high pace. I don't think it's controversial at all, and I do think it'll probably be unanimous that most people will give round of the year to this fight, to this round. And also, Chael Sonnen made a 10-minute video just about this round. He doesn't do that about any fight.
John, you're a Chael Sonnen guy. You have a point. Let's hear it.
You know, so many moons ago, again, being the old head here, I talked to David Branch, and David Branch didn't contribute a whole bunch to the UFC. He was a double champion World Series of Fighting. He talked about something that I thought at the time, I'm going to write this guy's book and this is going to be the title of it. He talked about something called the contract of violence. And he says, at the beginning of a fight, if we both sign the contract of violence, it's going to be a hell of a fight. Between the first and the second round, Dustin Poirier made an agreement with himself that I'm going to have to get hit by this kid in a way that I've not yet been hit by him to get to him and hit him. So, like, what Matt was saying about how, you know, Poirier couldn't quite get to him, Poirier's like, I'm going to have to go even – this kid's already piecing me up, and I got to go even more into harm's way to get off what I need to get off. That's what makes this round special. The fact that Poirier in the corner said, this has to get worse for it to get better, and that's what he did. And I'm here to tell you right now, it wouldn't be Dustin Poirier fighting – Conor McGregor in January, if not for that second round. That's when he turned the fight around and, in a way, turned around his fortunes in his MMA career, because he had made that agreement with himself in the second round that this is how it was going to be. So the third, fourth, and the fifth, he was fine for it to be that way because he decided it in between the first and second.
And we could have easily had Dustin Poirier as our comeback fighter, because you look at UFC 242, such a crushing blow against Khabib. To come back against Dan Hooker and put on that performance, absolutely amazing. Now, John went ahead and talked in riddles a little bit. Matt referenced Davidson Baker's former establishment, B-Dub Dubs. I miss going to the States and going to B-Dub Dubs before the fight events. Guys, truth be told, I haven't dressed up like this since February, when I was at an NEF show. Missed doing the live shows, missed going to the States. But again, round of the year, you have to give it to Hooker Poirier. The second round, absolutely amazing. Now let's parlay this, guys, into a great opportunity that we've been given in 2020. Matt, you and I have talked about this quite a bit, but we have to give shouts to our pals over at Manscaped. And support for Fight Night Picks is brought to you by Manscaped. Who's the best in below the waist grooming? Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. And listen, fans, I'm going to move myself into the middle. This is going to screw up the naming. John Franklin's never been a part of this. So, John, feel free to contribute as we go along. But where do you shave your nuts?
Where?
At what place in your house?
Oh, in the shower.
Good call.
In the shower. Good call. Not in the kitchen sink. Well, John, I have something for you in this bag of tricks, and it's the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0. Now, you've had it in the United States for a little bit, but they just released it in Canada, the UK, and Australia. And I got to say, that light, great added bonus. It's an electric trimmer. They've engineered the greatest ball hair trimmer with this Lawnmower 3.0. It's got a ceramic edge. It really does do the trick. And when I tell you it's premium, it definitely is premium. And I can tell, John Franklin, that as red as you are, maybe it's because you don't have a Lawnmower 3.0 and you could use it because you've been just going along with that department store stuff. It doesn't work out all that great. And if you get the perfect package kit that I have here in front of me, and it's tough when there's three of us, I'm going to tell you something. They have a little something in there that I've used on camera before. It's called the Weed Whacker. I'm a nose hair guy. John, honestly, I haven't seen you in person, but ear hair, nose hair, it sucks. Just like that. All good. One side of my nose, clear as can be because of this Weed Whacker. It's great products. And I mean, listen, they've got great charging stands. You can get a shirt. You get a pair of boxers. Who doesn't need that? Men, women, you name it, you get it. Get 20% off of free shipping with the code FNP at manscaped.com. Matt, you've got a kit. You made your testies, your besties. I think you could use the Lawnmower 3.0 on your hair, maybe on a little bit of the facial hair. But if it's already touched your nuts in the shower, who gives a damn at this point? So get 20% off and free shipping with code FNP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that code FNP. Your balls will thank you.
Fight of the year.
It is finally time for our main event. It's time. You've had your turkey. You're getting ready for your champagne. Let's put it all together. We're talking fight of the year. And I mean, hey, there's so many deserving fights. Maybe Ryzen 26 produces one on December 31st, New Year's Eve show. Listen, I have one honorable mention, and it was just a personal one. Yuri Prohashev, Volkan Oezdemir. So excited for that fight. It was absolute pandemonium. Oezdemir cracking Prohashev on the side of the jaw. Prohashev kind of like stanky legging, if you could, with your whole body and then just going right back at it. But our top five, Piotr Jan, Jose Aldo. I mean, it delivered everything you could want in a title fight if your name's not Jose Aldo. It was absolutely amazing. You have Dustin Poirier, Dan Hooker, a five-round fight that is on a fight night. That's absolutely amazing. It's our round of the year. It's the second round out of that fight. Shane Burgos, Josh Emmett. Now, that one's not the most popular pick because, again, it was, after all, a three-round fight, but it was absolutely amazing for what lasted. We're talking about so many great fights. Then you talk about the other two. And the reason why I say the other two is because they're kind of in a class of their own. Brandon Moreno, Deiveson Figueiredo, UFC 256. Amazing fight to cap off a great night of fights. And then Zhang Wei Li and Joanna Yan Jacek. It's a two-horse race in this instance. It's a really tricky one. I mean, again, shouts to Burgos Emmett. Shouts to Poirier Hooker. Shouts to Piotr Jan and Jose Aldo. John Franklin, this is a tough one. What are you thinking here?
You know, I just want to talk about stats for one sec. And we talk about how relevant they are in MMA. I'm going to tell you something about stats. Doesn't get talked about a lot. When you think in your mind about Deiveson Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno, right, and the amount of leather they were putting on each other. So 248 strikes for Figueiredo in that fight, 256 strikes for Brandon Moreno. Josh Emmett and Shane Burgos. Josh Emmett threw 275 strikes, and Shane Burgos threw 270 strikes. In three rounds, not five, three rounds. So I'm not out here caping for Josh Emmett and Shane Burgos. I'm telling you that 500 And 45 strikes in three rounds is a lot. And those boys were getting after it. So I just want to make sure that we kind of, if we're going to talk about this, let's talk about how much those guys did in three rounds, because that's very relevant. As far as the rest, again, we're talking about big fights in big spots. The one thing that I will throw out at you guys to consider, Wiley, Moreno, Aldo, are there, is the fact that we look at these like fight of the years because the three of them outperformed what we thought they were going to do? And thus, we look at it differently? Are we doing the Joe Rogan narrative thing here? Or do you think that they're legitimately, you know, fights of the year? I think they're all fights of the year, but there's something to be said for, you know, you start watching that Moreno-Figueiredo fight, and you're like, man, Moreno's doing pretty good. Start watching Wiley. I can't believe somebody's trading with Joanna like this. You start watching Aldo and Jan. I thought Aldo was done. There's something to that. So I'll let you guys chop it up now, but that's kind of what I see when I look at this.
Matt, I just want to say one thing about that Shane Burgos-Josh Emmett fight. We're cracking. It's going crazy. People are getting knocked down. It's absolutely amazing. Does Josh Emmett wrestle anymore? Who knows? But I look at that fight, and I think of Shane Burgos in my head, and maybe it was because I was there when it happened. Every time I think of Shane Burgos, I think, remember that time he got in a boxing fight with Calvin Kattar and did barrel rolls because he was getting outboxed? He definitely showed me that he could still hang with the top of the top at 145 pounds. Even though he didn't win that fight against Josh Emmett, kudos to him. That one, by far, it's the only three-round fight on here, was the best three-round fight of this year. Hands down, bar none, not even close. The rest of these fights, though, Poirier Hooker, Jan Aldo, Zhang Weili and Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Moreno Figueiredo. There's just something special about these fights, especially being five round fights and three of the four for titles.
Oh, and this is really the fun thing too. We all seem to kind of have a different top two right now. Like for John, his top two from the sounds of it is Weili, Joanna and Burgos Emmett. Yours is Weili, Joanna, Moreno Figgy. And for me, it's Weili, Joanna, Dustin Poirier, Dan Hooker. Cause okay, we knew Poirier Hooker was going to be good the second it was announced. That was the only one on the list where the second the UFC said Dan Hooker's about to fight Dustin Poirier, everyone, even people who casually follow the sport, were like, okay, that's going to at least be fight of the night at a minimum. And just the fact that it delivered ahead of what we even expected, even though our expectations were so high, I do think that deserves consideration. The Weili Joanna fight, that really came down to the wire. That wasn't just about how good the fight was. We didn't know who won the fight after it was over. And I know in hindsight, it's easy to go back and, oh, but Joanna had that big hematoma. I thought Joanna won that fight. And I was kind of surprised when they ended up giving it to Weili. Like, that fight was so competitive. And it was really martial arts at its highest level. Like, they were perfect the whole entire fight. And that was just a really beautiful demonstration of where women's MMA has come. And I remember we had said this too. Like, remember when Dana White was like, no, I don't want women in the UFC. And then Weili Zhang fought Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And it was like, well, no, this might just be the greatest fight of all time, regardless of gender. With Moreno Figueiredo, I do think there does have to be something to be said about the fact that no one thought Moreno had a chance in that fight. And it was just more competitive than we had gone into thinking it would be. And same thing with Jan Aldo. Aldo coming off a loss and getting the title shot wasn't all that justified. But still, the way that he was able to compete until the very end, I know the fifth round was just horrible if you're a Jose Aldo fan. But Jan just kind of ran over him when the fight got really competitive. So for me, my top two have to be Poirier Hooker and Weili Joanna.
Now, there's definitely a connecting thread, and the red guy to my other side has something to say. So, red guy, let's hear from you.
Never going to live this redness down.
Nope.
You know, again, as the old head here, let me tell you one more thing about Ettore Gatti and Mickey Ward. Jim Lampley said the most relevant thing that's ever been said about Ettore Gatti, which is you don't remember whether he wins or loses. You only remember how he fights. And the only reason that you're going to remember who won these fights is because a lot of them were for belts. And you'll remember who left the fight with the belt. You'll remember that Jan was the champion, not Aldo. You'll remember that Figgy was the champion, not Moreno. You'll remember that Weili was the champion, not Joanna. That will be the thing. If none of these fights were for belts, 10 years from now, you'd have no idea who won. I know a lot about Gatti Ward. So I know that, you know, Ward won the first one and Gatti won the next two. But for a long time in my brain, I couldn't remember who it was that won and which fight was which, because they were just great fights. They all get lumped together in your brain. I think that's what we're looking at with these. That's what an all-time fight is. You kind of forget who won.
And I mean, really, the thing, if you go by the logic that Matt, you brought up, you know, a connecting thread between the three of us, there's one fight that we have that's in our top two, and it's Zhang Weili and Yuan Jacek. And listen, to me, looking at this and going, okay, well, what are most people probably going to pick? Recency bias with Moreno Figueiredo. It was a great fight. It was for a title. It ended in a draw. We'll get the second fight in 2021. That's definitely deserving. It's crazy to think that Zhang Weili and Yuan Jacek fought with fans in a crowd. It's been a while since we've had that. Now, 2021, different animal. Maybe we get fans in the crowd for some of these other fights. But with that fight, the atmosphere around it, the fact that, oh, women strawweights can do this and put on this impressive of a performance, a lot of people, it was like, wow, totally awake. And now I'm excited when Carla Esparza, if she does fight for a belt, or the return of Rose Namajunas, or you name it, it gets people excited about this. And I really think that with a fight like that, you're going to get that ripple effect that everybody talks about. Like up here in Canada, you want to make a basketball reference? Matt, you remember you won't remember this. I remember this. When Vince Carter broke through with the Raptors, when he was winning dunk competitions, when he was going, it's over, even though that dunk wasn't the best dunk that he had that night, kids in Canada flocked to basketball. It's the same thing kids in the States with soccer. John, I'm sure Landon Donovan was a pretty big example and a pretty big reason why a lot of American kids get into soccer. Now the MLS is a big thing, even with a lot of imports. With Zhang Weili, Yuan Jacek, although the pandemic probably plays into it a little bit, I bet you there's a lot of women and girls that get excited and it's, oh, women and girls can do that. Why not put my daughter into combat sports? Why not? Instead of some of these other sports. So for me, that fight signifies so many different things and I can't put myself into their shoes or, you know, into parents' shoes or what have you, but it just means so much. And I really do think that Weili really set herself up well for a 2021, really left an imprint in the minds of a lot of combat sports fans. And when a lot of people look back at 2020, I hope that Zhang Weili is right up there, top of mind for a lot of people, because for me, she definitely is. John Franklin.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about what you said is that these things usually take about 5 or 10 years. And Joanna and Weili are a byproduct of Ronda and Misha in a lot of ways. And I think that that's kind of what you're going to see from these fights. These fights are going to birth, Sarah, I go again saying that, but are going to, you know, bring about a lot of, they're going to affect the sport, you know, in a way that you can't tell right away. Like Weili is huge, huge in China. We know this, right? And I think that is going to be, that may make a huge difference of MMA in China, years from now.
And I mean, Matt, as we get to see the top of your room there, do you have any parting thoughts on this conversation regarding the fight of the year?
I think we can all agree. You know how, you know, when they do International Fight Week, right before the main event, they'll be like, and now introducing to the UFC Hall of Fame. And sometimes it's a pioneer, sometimes it's a current fighter, sometimes it's a fight itself. This fight will find its way into the UFC Hall of Fame one day. Yuani and Jacek and Weili Zhang have both, they're going to be in the Hall of Fame, whether it's for their careers or not, but this fight will at least get them there. Like, Stephen Bonner failed steroid tests, and he is in the UFC's Hall of Fame because of how important his fight with Forrest Griffin was. The fight between these two, Weili and Joanna, I do think is important enough for not only the women's division, but just the sport moving forward that both of them will be able to get into the UFC Hall of Fame because of it.
And if you want to hear more about conversations surrounding the UFC's Hall of Fame, John Franklin, you and I have touched on that in the past, and I'm sure we'll touch on it a little bit more in the future. It is a sketchy, sketchy place, but hopefully that fight makes it. It's been an insane year. And listen, inside baseball's Matt got shorter and higher in this show. We get to see the top of the ceiling. John Franklin went from different shades of red. It was just like a movie that you'd pay to see. And I dressed up for the first time since February. We had an amazing year. I can't thank the fans enough for the 2020 that we have had. It's been absolutely insane. I never thought Fight Night Picks would be where we're at this year. I know we didn't get a chance to really talk about it, but we were really pining for 100,000 or 100,000. Let's go for 100,000 before the end of 2021. I was looking forward to 20,000 before the end of this year. So it's an auspicious goal, but I think we can still hit it. And even if not, parlay that into early 2021, and I'm sure it's going to happen. So I have to thank the fans out there. John Franklin, you have your weird American Thanksgiving November, but what are you thankful for in this 2020?
Well, first and foremost, for continuity's sake, do we ever actually officially award the fight of the year?
Fight of the year, Zhang Wei Li, Ioanni and Jacek, write it in stone. That was it.
There you go. You can update that post. What I'm most thankful for, I think, is, you know, we talk about this all the time, but I'll say it publicly. I like this channel a lot. I'm a guy that likes to do quirky things. You know, we do things that are pretty straightforward, and then every once in a while, you know, I'll call up Shaquille or I'll, you know, I get to do some crazy stuff. I think that we are, for just being the three of us, we're a pretty unique channel. And we bring, you know, a pretty unique perspective to the game. And the way that we're able to do shows with each other, I'm just thankful for the opportunity to do that. This is not to throw shade on other places, but I enjoy talking MMA. There's no issues with people I'm talking MMA with. That's cool. And I just think that, you know, more to come. I think that 2021, as we start to maybe make our way back into arenas, back into gyms, there may be some things to come.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, you know, Matt and myself are going to start to become the traveling show Fight Night Picks. That's definitely one of those inside baseball things that if and when the world starts to open up again, this whole Canadian thing, we'll be spending a lot more time in the States. I know, especially for regional MMA here in Canada, I have to say this, you know, Fight League Atlantic hoping to start back up in Nova Scotia. There's different rumblings about promotions in Ontario and BC starting back up. So hopefully we can get that going in 2021. I know everybody hopes for things like that, but I definitely do for sure. I mean, you talk about things up your sleeve, bigger events, Fight Night Picks events, stuff actually happening in the States. That's one of those things. So we're really looking forward to that. Matt, 2020, again, you join Fight Night Picks full-time at the end of the year. You still don't know how to work a camera or a microphone. So big ups to you. You stayed the same shade in this show. What are some of the lasting impacts for you in 2020? And what are you looking forward to next year?
Listen, 2020 sucked for a lot of reasons. And I think we can all agree on that. But one of the bright spots was the not only the growth of this channel, but really the community around it too. Like the people who take the time out of their weeks to listen to the three of us talk about MMA. Like there's a lot of things you can be doing with your time. And the fact that people would like to spend that time with us, it really means a lot. And just the continued support that we've had from when no one cared about us at the start of the year to now we are starting to develop somewhat of a following. It's just, it's really exciting. And it's really exciting to see where this is going to go in 2021. Again, if the worst year of most people's lives have been able to bring us this, then hopefully a year that will somewhat be able to outdo it in 2021 will bring on better and brighter things.
Cross your fingers, cross your toes. Really looking forward to a busy 2021. Hopefully you enjoyed the award show, a recap of the year that was 2020. We had a lot of great awards, a lot of deserving candidates. Maybe Ryzen 26 totally blows all this out of the water and it's the best event we've ever seen in human history. Who knows? That remains to be seen. But thanks for tuning in. You can always find us at Craig Allen FMP, at Matt Allen FMP, at SM Cornerman, but he's also at Sunday Morning Cornerman. Somebody's got to talk to that wild man. And again, at Fight Night Picks, looking forward to the three events in 3 weeks, the busyness that will be 2021. So we appreciate it. Guys, we got to sync this up as best we can on StreamYard on the internet. We need to leave the fans with a lasting impact of 2021, even though Matt's been a little bit laggy here. I need to get a great ending to this show. So as we always say with Fight Night Picks,
let's get into it.
That was bad. We'll work on that next year. Thanks for tuning in. We'll keep getting into it.